The following is presented by Le Sommet Coors Light, celebrity guests, entertainment, and oh, a bit of sports. Every Wednesday night on RDS.com.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm excellent, Mitch. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you very much. That was a very special treat. I'm trying to think of the equivalent to have a baseball star with a connection to Montreal, strong connection to Montreal, and the greatest hockey player that I've ever seen, Bobby Orr, together at the same moment in Boston. That was just something special.
Absolutely. I had goosebumps when I saw it. Usually, not always, but usually when I'm at a game in Boston and Bobby Orr's at a game, usually he comes down to the studio to say hello. Yesterday was one of the first times that I can tell you he didn't come by, so I knew it was something special, and then I found out that Pedro Martinez was going to be his suite mate last night, so I was like, that makes a lot of sense. I get it. The one time I remember, I want to say Bill Belichick and Bobby Orr were together. Not that that equates to Montreal athletic, royalty, but, you know, that's a pretty good twosome there with Belichick and Orr.
And if people have forgotten, Bobby Orr is 70.
Well, that's why I said what I said. He's in amazing shape. He's had both his knees done, and on one of the knees more than once. He spends a lot of time in Florida. I won't tell you where, but he golfs a lot and walks a lot, and he's phenomenal. He's still heavily involved in the hockey business, by the way, for those that don't know. He's an agent. He represents a lot of high-end players. All the Staal brothers are represented by him. Mark Recchi for the longest time, Brendan Shanahan, along with Ricky Curran. Those guys have an amazing agency. It's called the Orr Hockey Group, obviously, an amazing agency that still represents a lot of really good players. There's a kid named McDavid that's part of their group, and a kid named Hannafin that used to be part of their group. So they do a lot of big players.
We didn't play enough for our game. They've played their game better than we've played ours, and they've won both games. So I would use the word we were slow at times and stubborn.
That sums it up perfectly. Full credit to Tampa, but that's as slow as we've seen the Bruins look, and they were kind of stupid too.
They were, because they got behind the eight ball early. You know, the bad luck play for Matty Grizzlick. I said he got lost in the lights. So it's another baseball analogy too. He got short hop. You know, it was a rough infield play for him. And, you know, that could happen to anybody. What I really respect about Bruce Cassidy and the Boston Bruins, they didn't pull the kid off the ice. They left him out there for the next shift, and his game grew as the game went along. He had a really solid night for the Bruins, but they showed confidence in him. It's a really good lesson. It's a coaching lesson for a lot of guys in the league. But, no, Tampa, full marks. I said it was surgical last night. That was my description of it. I thought they were phenomenal in their own zone. Best I've seen them in their own zone. I thought they were great in the neutral zone, and when they had the 3-1 lead, they just shut it down. They reminded me so much of our good Penguin teams back in 91 and 92. When we got the lead on you, we smothered you. You did not come back against us in 91 and 92.
Pierre, I checked the numbers after the game, and I know he spent some time in the penalty box, but I noticed that David Backes played like 6 minutes. Is he okay, or are they just not using him when they're chasing the game?
No, he's fine. He's fine. He got cut on the nose last night in that skirmish that he had, which they called a fight with Cedric Paquette. But no, he's fine. We'll see, again, how it all translates going into game four tomorrow night. I think the biggest thing is that they fell behind. And when they fall behind, they go Bergeron, Krejci, 1-2, 1-2, 1-2. And so that kind of drops the numbers for players like Riley Nash, for David Backes, for Noel Achari, for Sean Corrali. Those guys' numbers dissipate because when they fall behind, they try to get the crowd back as quick as possible, and they go with their heavy-duty iron rather than go with their depth players.
You think we'll see Ryan Donato tomorrow?
I would imagine. I saw Ryan last night leaving the rink. We were in touch today, but he wasn't able to confirm one way or the other. But I believe, you know, if they make a roster tweak, he would be the likely first man up. What they need more than anything else is they need guys that can make plays with the puck because of the way Tampa's defending. They're collapsing 5 men below the tops of the circles in their own zone because they know they can't in a straight defensive scheme, they can't defend against the Boston cycle. They just can't. They know it. They saw it in game one. So what they need to do is, and they've made the adjustment subtly, and we showed this on our show last night, they've dropped 5 guys below the tops of the circles, and they're protecting the house is what they're doing. So they're keeping the Bruins to the outside because they're outnumbering them at the point of attack. It's a smart scheme. So when you face that, you need puck handlers and playmakers. And that's where Ryan Donato fits in really well.
It's quite something. The best teams, Pierre, must be able to kind of shift from generating most of their offense from the cycle to transition. And if you can do both, well, that must make you a Stanley Cup contender.
It does, and I love what you just said because it is the contender factor that's huge in that. The best teams can adjust over the course of a 16-win race. And if you can't adjust, you will not win. It's just that simple. And you prepare your team as a management group and as a coaching staff over the course of 82 games to get ready to make those adjustments. So that is probably one of the most valuable lessons I ever learned from Scott Bowman. And I can tell you, Bob Johnson learned that from Scott Bowman. And the Penguins have been a better organization ever since Scotty touched them because he learned that from Sam Pollock and Frank Selke Sr. and Toll Blake. So it's all traced back to Montreal, if you really want to know. But adjustment is the number one thing you have to do when it's best on best in this kind of an environment. So you're absolutely right, Rod.
Well, you just dropped some great names, so let me take the opportunity for those who haven't heard. Bill Torrey has passed away at the age of 83. He's a man who built, he's a Montreal guy. He grew up in the shadow of the Forum and helped build that Islanders dynasty of the 80s and was still very active.
Very active with the Florida Panthers. I was really looking forward to seeing Mr. Torrey at the Hockey Hall of Fame voting ceremony that I was, you know, for the first time I was going to have a chance to be a part of on June 26th in Toronto. I've known Mr. Torrey for a really long time, probably going back to the earlier mid-80s. You know, what a relationship he had with Al Arbor. You talk about those great Islander teams. I can tell you this, you know, when he started, he actually worked here in Pittsburgh with the Pittsburgh Hornets in the American Hockey League before he went out to Oakland. And he worked for Charlie Finley in Oakland. And he told some great... I remember when I was young in the business, he would tell stories about the white skates and the late Carl Vadney playing there in Oakland and, you know, some of the things he learned from Frank Selke Jr., who was the general manager in Oakland at the time. So, but Frank, you know, was obviously a great manager. He learned from his father. And you think about working for Charlie Finley, Mitch.
Wow. I didn't know that. I never knew that.
Charlie Finley with the Oakland Seals. So, yeah, pretty amazing. Mr. Torrey had a phenomenal career. I can just tell you, every single meeting I ever had with him was something. I learned something. I took something away from it. This is part of the problem we have in the league today. A lot of the young people are coming into the league to work. They haven't had the luxury of meeting people like Bob Johnson or Scotty Bowman or Toll Blake. They haven't learned about the legacy of the league. They haven't learned about the history of Eddie Shore. They haven't learned about how the Canadian dynasties were built. And I think that's why we have such constant turnover, because the young guys coming in, they don't have a real sense for what helped build the league. I really mean that. And I think, you know, when you lose a man like Bill Torrey, you're losing another amazing asset. And I'll quantify it to World War II. We've lost so many World War II vets. There's not many left. My father's brother, my uncle, just passed away 10 days ago. He was 94. He was, you know, fought in World War II. All those stories are gone. We're losing generations of people from the World War II generation, obviously. We're losing it in the NHL, too. And I think it's a big problem. I do. I really believe that.
I got a quick Bill Torrey story to tell, and I'm sure it came from Red Fisher, but I can't be positive. He took over the Islanders, right? It was 72. The Canadians had missed the playoffs. They were eliminated by the Rangers in the spring of 72, so the Islanders are starting. Everybody knew the number one pick was going to be Denis Potvin. Sam Pollock took Bill Torrey for a walk around the Forum trying to get the number one pick. And every rotation around the Forum, he added a player. He ended up adding four or five names to the list, and Torrey wouldn't budge.
I believe that story to be true, because I heard it, and I think you're right. It was Red Fisher that actually shared that with me a long time ago. So that's pretty funny. You know what's an interesting one, too, now that I'm sitting in Pittsburgh? Sam Pollock traded Rod Shutt to Pittsburgh. Do you remember that?
Rod Shutt, Peter Lee.
He traded Rod Shutt and Peter Lee to Pittsburgh, and Pittsburgh actually thought they got Steve Shutt. I am not kidding you. Yeah. I am not kidding you.
Rod Shutt was spelled story. Yeah, Rod Shutt was spelled S-C-H-U-T-T.
Correct. But they thought they were getting Steve Shutt.
Oh,
when I first came to work in Pittsburgh, the late Jack Riley, who was a general manager here forever and passed away maybe 1 or 2 years ago, Mr. Riley was just awesome to any of the young people. So grateful. I learned so much from him. He was just awesome. And Mr. Riley told me that story once, and I'll never forget that. I thought it was just spectacular. He said, yeah, we made a deal with Montreal. Everybody thought we were getting Steve Shunt. It was Rod Shunt. Darn it, were we wrong.
Oh, man, what a story. All right, 24 hours ago, we were wondering about the NHL Player Safety Department as soon as we left the air.
He has the option to deliver a legal full-body hit that makes shoulder-to-shoulder contact. Instead, Wilson pivots in his approach in order to hit Aston Reese with his left shoulder. This changes his angle of approach, taking him around Aston Reese's lead shoulder and causing the hit to be delivered into the center of Aston Reese's head and body.
And a repeat offender, 3-game suspension. What do you think of the suspension, and how does Washington react to it beginning tonight?
I never thought it would be 3 games. I thought he would get suspended. I knew that. I told you the camera angle that I had and the vision that I had of it. I knew there was the blow to the face and the head. It was really apparent from where I stood, and that's why I said what I said on television. But I never thought it would be 3 games. I think the line was drawn on Nazem Kadri in game one against the Bruins, where he got 3 games for his, you know, terrible hit on Tommy Wingles. And I think after, and Wingles came back to play in that series and has played obviously in the second round as well. Aston Reese is not coming back for the Penguins, and right. He's a very important player for this team. And, you know, I think Tommy Wilson is a really good player. I'm going to tell you that right now. And I talked to 3 managers after we got done yesterday, and I said, would you trade for Tommy Wingles? For Tommy Wilson. And they all said the same thing. Yes. There's not one manager I've spoken to or director of player personnel that says I wouldn't trade for him. So he's a valuable player. That was a hockey play that went really wrong. It went really wrong.
But how do they – I know they're starting with Devontae Smith-Pelly, gets moved up. How do they, as a team, react to this? They couldn't have expected this either, 3 games.
Well, I think they were expecting a suspension. They don't have to worry about the 3 right now. They have to worry about tonight. That's how you do it with these things. When you have a player that gets suspended, and again, just learning this from experience, you treat it as if the player's injured. So it's a next-man-up mentality. You can't worry about, you know, is it 3 games, or 5 games, or 1 game, or 2 games. You just worry about the player's hurt. We don't have him tonight. Where do we go next? Who's the next man up? Devontae Smith-Pelly is the next man up. He will fit in well there. What I wonder about, and this is something that has not been brought up enough, but when you really do a survey of the time on ice, whether the Washington defense can hold up tonight. Remember, Matt Niskanen missed almost 8 minutes of the second period in game number 3 because of blocking a shot and having an injured foot. John Carlson played almost 30. That's in regulation. It was 29-17, I think. Matt Niskanen, even though he missed 8 minutes, still played 21. Orlov was up to 24. So those 3 guys are, I don't know what they'll have in the tank tonight. That's what I'd be more concerned about if I were Barry Trotz. No, not so much about replacing Tommy Wilson. It'd be about how am I going to protect my defense. It was probably overused in game 3 because it had to be. They had no choice.
Hard to believe the Caps are unbeaten on the road in the playoffs, and the Penguins at home are 1-3. I can't see them dropping to 1-4 on home ice here.
You know, we never know, but yeah, it'd be shocking. One of the reasons why I think Washington's been so good, there was a level of urgency in their last series where they were down 0-2, if you remember, and they had to win a double overtime game in game 3 in order to keep the series alive, and they were able to do that. And then they got really comfortable in the series after that. But they were very uncomfortable in the series till that moment. And that was their – if there's one swing moment, if the Capitals go on to – whether it's a Stanley Cup final or to win the Cup, every team has a mark. We talk about all the time the Slay the Dragon mark. That will be their Slay the Dragon mark, because if they lose that Game 3 in double overtime, the Columbus are out in 4 games, and we're not even talking about them. They're done. They are not coming back against Columbus down 0-3 after losing a multiple period overtime game.
Any chance Carl Hagelin plays tonight?
Very good chance. And one of the things, if he does play, to be wearing a full face mask. So that tells me that it may be a little bit concussion related with him, but I would say more likely it was facial or trauma if he's wearing a mask. And I believe he'll be, if he plays, he'll wear a mask tonight.
Earlier today on Off the Cuff with Knuckles Nylund, the new senior vice president of hockey ops of the Carolina Hurricanes was on the show.
And we felt and still feel that Drouin can be a top center. He had a tough time at the start this year, but I thought he played pretty well down the stretch. And he's when he gets used to being in Montreal, I think he'll be just fine. I think that Donnie stayed somewhat quiet, but I think Tom is the same guy. He's still a great guy. He's still very bright. He's more experienced now. He's very active. He works as hard as any general manager in the National Hockey League, and he's done that from day one. There's nobody more active. There's nobody makes more phone calls. But again, people think you can just pick up the phone and get a number one center. You cannot. It just doesn't. It happens so rarely. And Burge works it as hard as any GM in the league. He's bright, and he's going to be responsible for success there for sure.
All right. Once again, Rick Dudley earlier today, Pierre, it's almost like it's become an organizational mantra. It's just, you can't find a center.
Well, that's when you get into the bunker and everybody's singing from the same songbook, the message isn't going to be varied. And so, again, that's been a weakness of the organization for a long time in terms of being able to acquire number one center. That's not a black mark on anybody. They just haven't been able to do it. How other teams have been able to do it, and they haven't, you know, again, that comes down to decision-making. I know Ryan Johansson's a number one center. He got traded from Columbus to Nashville. You know, and we can go, I know Jeff Carter can be a number one center. He was traded twice, once from Philadelphia to Columbus, once from Columbus to L.A. I can keep going if you want.
No, and I know somebody, and maybe even if Mark Bergevin himself, because we did a little bit of that with Mitch Gallo on the issue, he would probably say, well, yeah, Seth Jones with, well, you had P.K. Subban, and you...
That's what I'm saying. So you can try to paint the picture that they're painting, which is fine. That's their decision. Those are their decisions. But you make those decisions. Other people don't make them for you. Other people react to the decisions that you make. And those are the decisions that they chose to make. They prioritized what they did with certain players and how they did it. They're still thinking that Jonathan Drouin can be a first-line center and dominate in the league. That's okay. That's okay. Barring injury, let's compare Jonathan Drouin's points next year to Braden Point's. Barring injury, I think Braden Point will have more points than Jonathan Drouin. But Jonathan Drouin is going to get every opportunity to be a first-line center.
Well,
Make no mistake about it. Braden Point will not, because he's not beating out Steven Stamkos.
Yeah, I think most Canadiens fans listening, and probably some members of the Canadiens organization, are certainly hopeful that Jonathan Drouin is not the number one center for the Montreal Canadiens next season.
Well, how are they going to change that?
Well, they're going to have to find a center, and if they do, you move Drouin to the wing, his natural position, and he could be one of the most effective offensive wingers in the National Hockey League.
Well, the only way that's going to happen, I think, this year, because I keep looking at all this stuff in terms of free agent potential and everything else, or maybe tradable players, is if you get Tavares. I'm not overly optimistic that you're going to be able to acquire a top white center Iceman with the assets that you have internally, unless you're able to sign somebody, and all it does is cost you money. It doesn't cost you players or draft picks. Because the infrastructure, and Rick kind of touched on this, so I give him a lot of credit on that, the infrastructure that's been built with amateur players isn't deep enough to allow you to go out and make that kind of a move. You know, and they're not winning. They didn't win the lottery. New Jersey won the lottery last year. They got Nico Hischier. He's a number one center. You know, that's what's happened there, unfortunately, is they thought they were getting a number one center in Galchenyuk, and they haven't. It hasn't panned out for whatever reason. It just hasn't panned out.
No, and that's the area, right? If you take over an organization and 6 years later, the first pick that you made was supposed to be the guy who is a centerman, you look back and you go, well, that worked out. He's our centerman. 6 years later, he's emerging as one of the best centermen in hockey.
Right.
But obviously it didn't.
That's what we've talked about for a long time. And, you know, again, it's spilled milk now. It doesn't matter. They asked me in the meeting, you know, what do you do with the third overall pick? And I said, based on where the team is right now, I would probably trade it, and I'd hit the mother load because I'd get established NHL players, and I'd get them probably from an organization that would have a number one center that would be available. You know, Ryan Johansson went for Seth Jones. You have the number three pick overall. Seth Jones with the fourth overall pick, one pick behind Jonathan Drouin. So, you know, I mean, listen, it's spilt milk. It's water under the bridge, whatever
well,
you want to
yeah,
say.
Yeah, until they address it.
It's different philosophies, that's all.
Until they address it, we'll keep talking about it. 40 years ago in October, the Montreal Canadiens traded Rod Schutt, C-H-U-T-T, to Pittsburgh for Pittsburgh first-round pick in the 1981 entry draft. That turned out to be Mark Hunter. How about that?
Well, there you go. Like I said, I'm just
they
telling
thought they were
you,
getting
forget,
Steve Schutt.
I'll never forget Mr. Riley telling me, the late Jack Riley, oh, yeah, Pierre, we thought we were getting Steve Schutt. We got Rod Schutt.
I don't know. Let me make a quick look here. Rodney Schutt played 275 games in the NHL.
Yeah, he wasn't Steve Schutt.
Yeah. He had a 25-goal season. I wouldn't have remembered that. But everybody had a
25. No, I wouldn't have either, honestly.
All right, Pierre. 90 minutes from now, what do you expect tonight?
I expect Pittsburgh to play their best game. I just spent a lot of time with former Montreal Canadian great Mark Recchi, who's an assistant coach here. And I would expect some subtle little line changes from the Penguins in terms of players in, players out. Got some guys getting healthy, and I think you know, the Wilson loss will affect this series, I think, for one game. I don't know if it's past one game, but I think it will have an effect on at least one game.
Thanks, as always. Looking forward to it. We'll talk again tomorrow at 5:05.
My gosh, it's my pleasure. I'll be in Boston tomorrow, ready to rock.